Chapter 3, 131. Naira and a few others broke into a run as the master gave a piercing cry and fell backwards as though struck, hands clutched to his face. Like grass flattened by a wind, the declined fell to their knees around the tent, the movement rippling outwards to reveal a solitary figure stood in the doorway. Axata, the commander of the guards, a giant of a man from Golgora, bellowed orders to his warriors, sending them into the camp, weapons at the ready.
"Wait! Wait!"
Nairo shouted, surging in front of the others despite his age-worn limbs. His fears were unfounded. Axata moved his company only to secure the area, but gave no order to attack. Nairo had eyes only for the master, not out of any loyalty to Corferon, for he was a despicable man, but for fear of his own future. Without the master, he and the other slaves would be left to the untempered attention of the guards, who would likely be even worse than the preacher. Nairo was a few strides from the fallen figure of Corferon before he looked at the figure at the threshold of the tent. In the moment his eyes met the violet gaze of the child, all the strength ebbed from his body and his head swam. Mid-stride, he fell, face first, into the hot sands, senses whirling, the image of a golden face burned into his thoughts. 132. It sounded like singing at first, as though a chorus from an imperial choir away in the distance. A harsher sound entered, the chatter of the silver crows that used to flock in the trees outside the gate of the orphanage. Noise swirled around Corferon, swaying from one side to the other, dizzying and brutal. It resolved into voices, the desert cant of the nomads. He knew a few words and phrases of the tongue, but recognized nothing that was said. He opened his eyes, but saw only the darkness of the sunshade for a few heartbeats before the scarf-shrouded, weathered faces of the declined intruded upon his view, concern in their dark eyes. They receded at a shout from Axata, scattering from the approach of the guardmaster and his armed companions. A few of the slaves crouched over their master, hands outstretched but unwilling to touch his holy flesh. Pain throbbed across his forehead and pulsed in his temples when he sat up. Blinking hard, he could not dismiss the twin pinpricks of brightness that seemed seared into the centre of his eyes. For a moment his discomfort robbed him of all recollection, but with a gasp the memory returned, and he sprang to his feet. He averted his gaze from the boy, a half-year-old, and no more from what Corferon vaguely remembered of the height and features of the figure that had so stunned him, and his piercing eyes sought Fan Morgai. He spied the chief of the declined tribe close to his tent, conversing conspiratorially with his family. He stepped away as he saw Corferon rouse himself.
"What heresy is this?"
demanded the preacher, advancing on Fan Morgai, spittle flying from his lips.
"What have you sequestered from the light in this camp of blasphemies and darkness?"
"He's just a boy, Corferon," retorted the chieftain's wife. "A child we found in the desert. We saved him from the scorching."
"Just a boy? Do you not see that the light of the powers is upon him? Why would you hide him from me, the bearer of the word?"
Corferon reached the gaggle of nomads and snatched at the robe of Fan Morgai, dragging him close.
"Would you raise him up as some desert soothsayer? Perhaps a false prophet? Think you to be the captor of another Tezzan, or Slanat, Cain, or Narag? What falsehoods would you lay in his heart, corrupter?"
"He is just a child," said Fan Morgai, echoing his wife.
He pulled himself away from Corferon's grasp, careful not to lay his own skin upon what he believed was the blessed flesh of an ordained priest. Corferon noticed a lack of determination in the chieftain's manner, as if an unspoken doubt troubled his thoughts. The itinerant preacher knew that he had looked upon something great, and he knew with equal vehemence that the child could not be raised by the superstitious, ignorant savages of the declined. Worse still would be to allow the boy to remain with them and then fall into the clutches of the Covenant, or one of the other city churches. Even so, there was only so far he could push the traditions of hospitality before Fan Morgai decided his guest was no longer welcome. Corferon raised his hands, touching his fingertips to his briefly closed eyelids in a gesture of apology.
"Forgive my blindness, Fan Morgai,"
he said, in what he hoped was his most conciliatory tone.
You must know that the child is not of mortal birth.
Not mortal? He is not, you are right. Not as we think it. It is only 17 days since we found him, preacher, in a glassy crater edgewards of the Katak Oasis. He was an infant, a babe in arms. Now look at him. A half year aged in just 17 days.
He should come with me, Fanmorgai. I shall lead him to the truth. You know it is more than happenstance that we have met this day. Of all the deserts to cross, of all the preachers and tribes to meet, the powers have placed you and I together in this place at this moment. A greater work is unfolding around us. You have done your part, kept safe that which the powers have gifted us. Let me take him, Fanmorgai.
Why do you not ask me?
133. Corferon stiffened at the sound of the new voice behind him. Its timbre was childlike, formed by immature vocal cords and a small chest, but its tone put him in mind of the high acolytes of the orphanage where he had been raised, steeped in considered wisdom and calm temperament. It was a voice filled with dignity, speaking perfectly the water words. Corferon met the gaze of the nomad leader and recognized the look in his eye, an understanding of the shock that currently bewitched the holy wanderer. "I know exactly how you are feeling," Fanmorgai's expression said to him.
"It is all right. You can look at me now,"
the boy said quietly. Corferon turned his head and glanced over his shoulder, expecting the blaze of energies that had assailed him before. Instead, he saw the boy swathed in shirt and trousers, too big, face framed by a dark red scarf. The violet eyes were as bright as before, but there was none of the imperial abyss into which Corferon had found himself dragged when he had previously met their stare. Even so, the gaze of the child was disquieting. The preacher turned fully to look at the infant, but could not find the words he desired. The aura of the boy was intoxicating, a vessel for the light of the powers.
"What did you say, Lorga?"
said Fanmorgai.
"You named him?"
Corferon directed a venomous glare at the nomad.
"You gave him one of your filthy sand names?"
"It is a good name," Fanmorgai replied. "A very old name. It came to me the moment I laid eyes upon him. Or, I should say, the moment I recovered my senses after seeing him. It means the rain caller."
"I like it, Corferon," said Lorgar. "If it does not displease you too much, I should like to keep it, as a reminder of this time with Fanmorgai and his kindness."
The request was made quietly, but it entered Corferon's thoughts with the same weight as the commands of the powers themselves. To deny it would be to attempt to hold back the energy of the sun with his bare hands. He nodded, struck dumb for a moment.
"A reminder?"
Corferon latched on to the meaning of the words.
"You will accompany me?"
"Your speech was very moving, Corferon. I know that I am different, unique. You are the bearer of the word, and I would learn of the powers and of the truth."
He spoke the words with the same inflection as Corferon, perfectly mimicking the emphasis the priest placed upon them.
"I think that if I am taught of these, then perhaps I may understand myself. You can teach me these things."
"I..."
Fanmorgai had tears in his eyes, but nodded at this pronouncement, as powerless to resist the boy's desire as the dunes are to resist the shaping of the winds. 134. Corferon felt something else stir in his breast as he looked at Lorgar. The flame of passion burned as never before, ignited by the presence of the child, but in the fire he felt a different purpose than before. When he had been cast into the desert, he had vowed to bear the word to all who would listen. Every convert a reward in itself, proof that he did the works of the powers, and that the covenant was built upon falsehood and dogma. Now, Lorgar presented a new means by which the word might be elevated. Corferon's thoughts buzzed with a grander plan, a triumphant return to Varadish, with a new prophet beside him to scour clean the corruptions of the Covenant. He tilted his face away, lest something of his desires were shown to Lorgar. Stepping past Fan Morgai, the preacher turned his back on the boy and beckoned impatiently for him to follow across the shadowed sands to the temple rig.
"Come with me, Lorgar. I will teach you of the powers and the truth."
Growls and grumbles followed them, but no overt protest was made by the declined. The slaves who had come to their master's aid scurried past, dashing through the heat of the sun to either side to reach the temple rig ahead of Cor Pharaon. Axata fell into step at his left shoulder.
"Others would kill for the child," Cor Pharaon told his captain without looking around. "He is salvation and damnation. Even though they are willing to give him unto us, these vagrants will happily flap their lips of what has occurred here, and others will come looking for Lorgar. We cannot have news of the boy reaching the ears of the Covenant. They would scour the desert for us."
"I understand, Holy Master," replied Axata.
He peeled away, leaving Cor Pharaon and Lorgar to approach the shrine wagon. Cor Pharaon waited at the bottom of the ladder, and then motioned for Lorgar to precede him up to the deck. When the boy was halfway up, Cor Pharaon grabbed the rungs and hauled himself onto the rig as the sigh of wind bows and crackle of fusils burst into life behind him, greeted by the panicked shouts of the declined.